So often when I give these talks, a single word pops into my head and is very instructive and important, I think. And the one that's been evolving over the week and maybe longer is the word responsibility. I've talked a lot recently about how our ego is not a mistake, it's not an enemy, it's not a combatant, it's an essential, absolute part of the universe. It is not a mistake, it is crucial to all that is that you in this moment exist. Your being, you exactly as you are, who you are, is an outcome of, if you want to put it in time terms, billions of years of creative evolution. And its goal, part of its goal, was to make you exactly as you are. With the understanding that there is a contractual responsibility between infinite being and your person. You came into being as an expression of infinite wisdom and beauty. And you have a responsibility, having been formed by so many eons of effort, to be responsive to that creation. One responsibility is to live in accord with this gift, with this understanding, if you can find it, that your creation was meant to be. That this is not haphazard, mistaken identity. You, exactly as you are formed, have a purpose in being here. And that is to respond to this dynamic by, first of all, paying attention, following the rules as best you know them, recognizing as much as possible your connection to something infinite and vast, and then serving what you have been given. The rules are not always clear. The rule book is not exactly in the hands of your mother and father and grandparents and ancestors. They will pass something down to you to be explored, to be unearthed, to be acknowledged, but it is not necessarily the thing you need to evolve into. It's something you need to stabilize yourself with and move beyond. We all have our DNA. It's there for a reason. It's not pretty. It's not perfect in our mind necessarily. It comes in full of misunderstandings and faults and difficulties, but it's ours. And we have to embrace what is. We have to embrace, this is what I stand on, this is who I am, now what? Look for the rules beyond your DNA. Look for the rules beyond your understanding. And the first ones you will discover will probably be in the religious zone, the metaphysical zone, the realm of things like the Ten Commandments. Here's a rule book for Judeo-Christians, people who have embraced a particular theology, and there's 10 rules that are not all that difficult to discover. They're present everywhere you look. There are temples and churches and synagogues all around reflecting that there are some rules here. If you come from an Eastern tradition, the rules are everywhere in the Hindu temples and traditions and the Buddhist teachings. Muslims have their own rule book. These rules are meaningful. They are valuable. They kind of create a code of ethics, how to behave in the world that may be a little bit at odds with the DNA. Your DNA may give you certain kind of tribal understandings that you realize are old animosities, old difficulties, things that hold you back to other people's traditions. You can look at all of that in the light of the teachings that maybe come from your religious environment or ethical environment. And you can begin to say, I can modify who I am based on my understanding of the rules, the teachings, the history, the DNA. I can begin to make myself into someone better than, more expressive than, bigger than the things I was given. This is a real journey into becoming you, into awakening to who you are. But it is only the beginning of an effort. You go to school, you start to discover the things that are easy, the things that are hard, the stuff that is working for you, the stuff that is alien to you. You start to discover that you have a kind of directive. You're good at math, you're good at reading, you're good at music, you're good at art. You start to discover something you're good at or not. It may be sports, kicking a ball, you know, running. Whatever these things are that you start to discover, you can build strengths around them, you can build a body around them, literally and figuratively, and you can begin to function in the world as a person who is finding themselves, listening to the rule book, obeying as best you can the larger sort of ethical demands of being alive in this world, the parental demands as best you can. And for many people, that's as far as it gets. Live a good life. Be a good person. Be who you are. And you know pretty much from these books and rules that if you disobey, you are going to get in trouble. If you steal, if you kill, if you covet your neighbor's wife, or even if you get into the essential things like you shall have no other God before God, you know, if you start to disobey these things, complications arise and they cause something we call suffering. And that suffering is there to kind of remind you, wake you up, pay attention, do the things that you were told by life itself you should be doing. There is something that can happen in our lives that wakes us up into a deeper, penetrating awareness. It can happen through reading books, going to an art museum, suddenly seeing a world of beauty you may never have witnessed before, learning about other people, awakening to something bigger. It could happen as a little kid, as it did for me in the sandbox, playing in the sandbox and suddenly realizing the whole sky had opened up, it had turned to night, and there were like Ezekiel wheels spinning around me that made no sense in the middle of the day. It was like, what? In my story, getting out of a car with my dad to see, you know, a little girl who had just been run over by a car and a blanket covered with blood, and I'm 5 years old, and I'm going, you told me people didn't die until they were old, and suddenly there was a little girl. Every rule, everything I knew about life was suddenly upended, a lack of faith and trust in the journey, and then going, well, then what? How do I get more? Usually there's something that comes out of dissonance, pain, suffering, brokenheartedness. Something opens you up, that crack that the light comes through. And we start to go, there's more. There's more. Either that there is more or I need more. Because sometimes the suffering and the pain of dissonance in our human lives is so great that we don't know how to get by. We don't know how to get to the next moment. We suffer dramatically. And then these shocks come to the system that explode the possibility that there is something underlying all this that's meaningful. And we begin a journey to go into that space. If we're lucky, we start to be drawn into a incredible sense of there's more to this than meets the eye. How do I get there? A deeper immersion in your religious life often will lead to what we'll call the spiritual, the Father, Son, Holy Ghost idea. The name of God that cannot be pronounced. This Buddhist idea of sitting still and discovering who you are. Meditation. These things start to percolate around us, and they start to inform us that there's something we can do, that we can be responsible to, that will have purpose. That we can begin to align ourselves with something greater, bigger, higher. And we have to kind of feel our way into it because there's not a lot of directive. There are people who will teach us how to meditate, sit still, breathe, chant a mantra, find a way into a still pointedness that is not part of the noise of your daily mind. Find a way in to something that is not outward, but inside. There's a directive that starts to pull us inward, and once you go in, you discover it is incredibly embracing, inviting, comforting, still pointed, opening, massive, vast, infinite, something inside you. And you take your little baby steps into that world and you go, this is good. I like this. If you can stay away from the ego investment in it, which starts to make you a better, holier, smarter, more spiritual person than everybody else, if you can get away from that and get humble in its presence, because that's really what it wants to have happen, you will start to see that this thing, the more you get out of the way, fills you. It inflates you, it opens you, it expands you, it thrills you, it speaks to you, it informs you, it teaches you every single day. And as you go into that space of expanded stillness, what happens is you discover that you have a responsibility to it. It's not just there as like, hey, it's yours, do what you want. It's the opposite of that. It's, here it is, now own it. Find your interaction with it that makes it expressive in the world, that fulfills it, that allows the light of it to pass through into this manifested state. Because that's what it appears to want to do. It wants to come through you. It wants to express itself everywhere. It has a joy in being expressed to the outer. It's created this vast world with you in it so that it can be seen and known and expressed and witnessed and loved. And you are, as you become increasingly conscious, responsible to make that happen. This is not a casual responsibility. This is a deep foundational responsibility that every human being has once they discover that it even is operating. Becoming a spiritual being is not just liberated, in a sense, from your personality, which it is, from your persona and from your history and your story. It's being liberated not just to give you uplift and joy and ease, it's to make you more available to who you truly are, to this vast upside-down pyramid cone uplifting energy that comes all the way down from infinite time and space and goes through you, and you have to be available. You have to show up. You have to show up every day. You have to say, "Thy will be done," and that means, what is thy will? How do I best serve this thing? And it doesn't even have to be a choice, although there's a certain point in spiritual development where you really have to say, please help me. Please help me. Because you don't know. But there comes a moment in true awakening or enlightenment, if you want to call it, where you are nothing but an available pathway, opening, expression of the infinite, vast truth of your being. And you will find that the dance of opening, the dance of being, the showing up, the being available, the walking down the street and expanding yourself to being the light that wants to come into the world, that's what you do, and you'll do it all the time. You will be responsible for your particular expression, which will be uniquely you. It won't be like anybody else. It will find its way into every nook and corner of your life. And the tiny little things like, I don't know, I unwrap these hard candies when I walk sometimes, and I have a wrapper. And I could throw it on the ground, but nothing in the world will let me do that. I am looking for the one garbage can that's sitting somewhere on the walk that can take my wrapper. If I were to drop that wrapper in the bush, I would be paying a price for that down the road. I know I will. So I will be picking up 35 other wrappers from other people just to pay for the one that I unconsciously, unceremoniously dropped on the ground for somebody else to pick up. You don't get away. You don't get away with it. Your actions have reactions. How you respond to the world comes back. You feed into the system, it feeds into you. It is an incredible dialogue is the wrong word, because dialogue implies there are two of you. But it's one thing. It's one thing that is opening to itself, that is being responsible to itself. We are foundationally, fundamentally, consciously responsible for being one with ourself. And it will play into the world. And the way it will play into the world will be how you speak, how you express yourself, how you embrace other people, how you play with your children, how you embrace the people who you are closest to, how you dialogue with the people who you barely know. All of that just keeps playing, and you will feel every time you do it right, every time you give love when it's needed, every time you show up to somebody who really has a need for you, every time you sit back and truly listen to another person or acknowledge them, this thing in you will go, ah, ah. It's so sweet. It's so beautiful. It's how you feel when someone gives you a hug, when someone comes and touches you on the shoulder and says it's going to be okay. That's how it feels, but now you're the engineer of that for other people, and other people will do that for you. And if they don't do it for you, here's the amazing thing. Your own self will do it for you. Your own self will comfort, embrace, love, support, calm, energize, direct, and love you. So your need for other people will become less and less essential, and you will start to see other people as expressions of yourself that you can comfort in the same way that you are comforted. You can help and spread light in the same way that light shines through you. You can go to other people and be deeply available. Not just people, spiders. that you pick up off, you know, take out of the house instead of crush. You know, little tiny things, the little thing, the rock you take off the road so that somebody doesn't hit it on their bike. You know, this little stuff, it just becomes a dance, and there's no patting yourself on the shoulder. This is like, this is of course what you do. This is of course how you behave. This is what human beings do. And then you will look around you at all the human beings who are not doing it. Not doing it. And instead of judgment and hierarchy and thinking you're better than them or anything like that, you will feel this unbelievable care and compassion for them, because you know ultimately the journey you have been on your whole life is a journey they have been on or are or should be on or will be on at some point. And all you can do is love them and feel for them and care for them, because they are an expression of the journey you are already on. Everyone is that. Everyone. And your job, if you choose to take it, is to help them. Just help. In whatever way you can. You don't have to sit and talk. You don't have to be a meditation teacher. You don't have to be anything. You just have to be you. And if you're just you, and I mean just you, not you hierarchy, you know, huge, wonderful, recognized person, just you. If just you lives that life, you are a gift. You are a gift to everyone and everything around you. And all it takes is being responsible. That's the word, responsible. How can I respond? How can I pay attention? What do I do if I'm disconnected? What do I do if I'm lost in my own drama or anger or whatever? How do I find my way back to connectivity? You know, that's really the job. That's the job of a meditator, the job of a spiritual person, not to walk around being endlessly perfect, but finding how to return to the situation, the inner being that you know is within you, that you lose touch with because you're human. You know, days, there are days, there are good days and bad days. There are times that are easy and times that are hard. Your job is recognize what it is and find out, how do I respond to this, to be responsible to this fact that I'm not as open as I could be, or I'm more closed, or I'm going through a sad time. What do you do? And I will tell you, one of the first things you'll learn is accept it as it is, because fighting it and being angry at it and being hostile to it only exacerbates the problem. So you go, okay, this is where I am. This is what I am. This is who I am in this moment. The minute you arrive at this moment, it's already starting to open. It's already starting to take place. Your responsibility was accepting it as it was, or as it is. Being present. As soon as you're present to it, presence is the key, and it goes, it opens up. If it doesn't open up and you don't feel connected, just know something that's really crucial and the core of all human experience. You are never disconnected. You are never not connected. You are not conscious, maybe, of the connection, but you are never disconnected. The universe is never unaware of you. It is never uninterested in you. It is never for one billionth of a second separated from your being and your life. And I'm talking about your day-to-day ego, miserable, joyful, complicated life. It is entwined in all of that, and it knows every molecule of your experience. And it cares about it. Truly cares about it. It's like it's really ultimately important to it. And I know that's hard to believe, you know, the wrapper that you throw on the ground as though it doesn't mean anything. It really means stuff. It really does. There is this thing called karma. There is this thing called consequence. Actions have reactions. So be conscious as best you can and responsible for the highest version of yourself, of being the best version of you that you can. It's an incredible gift to yourself, to the universe, and to its manifested form, which is everyone else. That's the gift. That's the incredible gift that we have to offer. And I know each of you, and I know each of you is a gift. You are. You're a gift to me, You're a gift to each other, and you're a gift to many, many other people. And it doesn't have to be defined as a gift. It doesn't have to be packaged and wrapped. It's just a simple giving. Anything, how you hug somebody, how you greet them in the morning, how you say hello, goodbye, whatever that is, believe me, it touches people. It informs people. The clearest expression of it, the best expression of it, is love. Just love. If you walk around open-heartedly, you will feel love. And love will be a thing that moves beyond you. I talked about this in class in New York, and I want to repeat it because it's such a beautiful line that Ramana Maharshi used. He said, the form of God is love. If you respond to love, if you're responsible to feeling the love that's already inside you, if you can drill back into your heart when it gets shut down and find the avenue of love rushing toward you, it's really like an oil well, you know. If you don't have guys drilling down, that oil just sits under there. But so if you do the job of the drilling, drill, 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 the ocean of love is just waiting to be found, and geysers of love will come pouring out. You can't always get it without the drill bit, without the work. You do the work, you open and you feel this thing, and it floods out of you, and that ocean of love, the form of God, expresses itself through you. Again, this is our responsibility. Do the work, do the drilling, do the opening, do the asking, reach. Talk to God, talk to the universe, talk to the powers of existence and say, help me, I'm here, use me, keep me open to your grace. That's what you say over and over and over, and this thing will serve you forever, forever. So, there's a lot more to say about responsibility. Ask the universe to explain it to you. It will come through. It will speak to you. You will figure it out. You are responsible for that, and it's up to you. Any questions?
I listened to part of New York's talk about the ego, and a question related, I guess, also here. After the awakening was, and you said your ego disappeared or shrunk. How does that relate to this here too?
There's so many ways of explaining the awakening process. One of them, which I like, is you are a grain of sand that suddenly becomes aware of the beach, of the billions of grains of sand, and you are no longer limited to that singular grain. You are every grain that ever was. So in a way, it's not like you have gone away, it's like you have become aware of who you truly are, of the bigger version of you, but that grain of sand is still there until it's ground into powder. It's still there. And so there is, and part of the awakening experience is becoming aware, like a candle becoming aware of the sun, is a way the Hindus often have talked about it. It's the bigness of what you are and the tininess of the candle. The idea that the candle blows out is something that some people use as a way of describing this experience. You just become the whole thing. But one of the important things to understand is you still have a body. You still have a mind. What's gone is the ego-minded seeking for who am I, what am I, what is this, all the questioning, all of the storytelling that surrounds your ego mind, all of that starts to fall away, but there's still a body, there's still a mind. It just isn't invested in the story. It's not invested in what was. And so much of what you centered around as a personality, story-driven entity is gone. But there is this body, mind, still there. And what's happening with that thing? Well, there's this idea of the seeker, which has to do a lot with the ego, looking for something to explain itself, to understand the world, to conceptualize reality, when that goes away, which is what dies on some level when you awake, what's still left is the finder, the discoverer. There is endless discovery, but it's not building into a story of you. It's not building into an ego entity that can walk around saying, hey, I can now charge $500 for a sitting for people to hear my wisdom. It's just discovery for the unbelievable joy of saying, oh my God, this is beautiful. I never saw this before. I never felt this before. There's a newness to everything, and a bigness and a wonder and an awe of being that is unstoppable. And it has nothing to do with you. It's a recognition in your body mind that you are one with something so unbelievably vast and real and beautiful that the biggest reaction that you get is thank you. Gratitude, this thing I talk about every week, wow. This is what you get. That's not an ego saying, look who I am. That's an ego. When it does do that, if it does do that, then you're in trouble. Then you're going, hey, I got this. The minute I have it, the universe will work very hard to obliterate that. The worst egos, the biggest egos, the most dangerous egos, I call spiritual egos. People who own this awareness, who build it into another me, another I, an identity. That's really problematic. It's the antithesis of what's wanted here. What's wanted is the discoverer, not the seeker, something that opens to and is available to the world without having to get a personal value from it. It's no longer about me, it's about the I am, which is not individualized at all. It's I am is all there is. That's how it's totality. And totality is awed by itself, I will tell you that. It walks around going, look what I am, look what I am. But it ain't personal. It's something so beautiful and beyond. You know, I talk about, you know, museums. People go to a museum. People whose eyes have never been opened to beauty and who don't understand spirituality. Walk into a museum sometimes, a little kid from a little town who goes to the Metropolitan in New York, and he walks in and he goes, oh, you know, sees his first Monet or his, you know, whatever it is you see, that's their spiritual moment. That's when they get, oh, and they go, oh, it is so beautiful. Not that I am so beautiful, I can't do that. You just witness it. And then you start to look as you grow older and you see the whole world looks like that. The whole world's a Monet. If you look at it from a particular perspective, or a Chagall, or you can name painters who see very well and depict very well, you know. But you're that person, and seeing it is half the job. The other half is to, if you want, to use it in some way. Now you can't all sit down and paint a painting, but you can take that wonder and that beauty and walk around as an appreciator. Here's what's really valuable in life: an appreciator is a wonderful role to play. Or like a listener. You don't have to be the creator. You can be the appreciator and the listener in life. That's a role. And it's a beautiful role, and it's not an ego role. It's just somebody who walks around who goes, wow. You and I have this dialogue a lot about this ego thing. You know, wanting to get rid of the ego is as much a problem. It's an expression of ego. You know, but I look at you and I always see the thing that precedes that ego thing. I just see it. There's something so beautiful and vast and already present in you. I get it every time I sit with you. And all I can try to do is to smudge away that little Shelley thing that still is looking and thinking it still has to find something. And I see so clearly that you are that. You are that. And this smudge thing, it's just time now. It's just time and response, responsibility. Your job is to just go, nope, don't need Shelley, don't need that ownership, don't need that quality. It's just a little tiny voice that goes, not necessary. And the freer you are of that historical sense of self, you will start to feel the vastness of I am, which is not a Shelley, it's something with no name. No name, but all names. And it's really worth it. And you're one little millimeter away from that thing, but as long as you're so focused on that thing, it becomes like, oh my God, how will I ever get it? You are it. You are it. Nothing. It's gone. Finished.
Is what you were saying sort of like the saying that goes, our only responsibility is our response to God's ability? Does that kind of take the ego into...
It kind of hits it. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, our response is... It's not just responding to God, it's taking ownership of the need to align. Alignment. To put yourself in a place of serving, witnessing, being something that is an expression of this thing that wants to be expressed. Making ourselves available to that in any way we can. It can be writing a line of poetry. It can be taking Blanche to the Apple store and getting a new phone after all these years. There are these things that people can do that help others move forward in life and help each other in our journey through the crazy miasma of material form. It's not easy. This is not easy. And the little bit that each one of us does, it may look little compared to writing the Declaration of Independence, but it's not little in terms of your particular construct, you know? Jefferson had to write the Declaration of Independence, but he was completely born to do that. He was aligned for that, you know? We're not all aligned. We're aligned for our particular thing. And if you can stop judging yourself in comparison to all these other people, you'll feel very satisfied with the being you are if that being is responsible to its larger self and its daily self. And it's a lot of work. It's a lot of work. Not everybody chooses to do it. Most people do not choose to do it. My experience is people are running around causing havoc for themselves and others all the time, and a few people are trying to say, you don't have to do that. In the best, simplest way they can. Not always effectively, you know, because you can't always be responsible for saving the planet. But you can be responsible for helping somebody cross the street, whatever that may be.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Done. Thank you, guys.